How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 123 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there, and leave a review once you're on that page. And find us on audioboom.com as well. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. This is actually my first conventional intro of the show for the entire week because I did a podcast with some other Locked On people this week, and I had Peter Edmiston a couple of times, and I didn't lead any of those intros, I don't think, now that I think about it. So this is my first conventional intro. It's not a solo show, though. I was going to do a solo show Wednesday night for the Thursday episode after the Grizzlies win, and then Peter and I were DMing, and we were like, let's just record another one together. So we did that instead, even though I put out a Twitter call for questions like I normally do when I'm going to do solo shows after games, because let's be frank, it's a little easier to outline a show when I can just read off Twitter questions. Today, I've got an actual guest today. I'm going to have Royce Young on. Royce is like 6th or 7th appearance on the show. If you're a Thunder fan, you know Royce. If you're a relatively longtime listener of Locked On Thunder, then you'll know Royce because he's been on a bunch of times before. We talked about, I've already recorded it, so I can tell you what we talked about. We talked Westbrook, we talked MVP, we talked about Royce's insane love for ketchup, we talked about this crazy January that the Thunder are going to have and what defines a successful one. Think it's a pretty interesting conversation if you like the Thunder or just if you are a major ketchup supporter. Now, one thing I do have to say, we recorded this, the sound was a little weird, kind of had sound issues recording on Skype. It kind of sounds like every once in a while there's a maraca in the background. It was worse for the first 10 minutes. After that, it kind of goes away. But I didn't want to make Royce record for another 52 minutes or so. And I didn't think it was so bad. So I apologize for the worse than usual sound quality. But I think it's pretty decent. And I think the conversation was worth going with anyway. I'm going to get to Royce in 1 second. But quickly before I do, I just want to tell you guys about SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for football or basketball games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being in the stadium or the arena for the biggest plays of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. And with SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, too. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter the promo code LO Thunder. That's LO, like locked on. And SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so let's welcome to the show from ESPN, from now tying John Hamm, I think, for the most Locked On Thunder appearances as a guest ever. Another edition of Royce's Voices, Royce Young.
Can I come on tomorrow so that I can pass John?
Hey, yeah, we'll do a special show. I don't do weekends, but
let's just do two today. Do this one. Wait 15 minutes and then do part two.
Upset of the year of the of between you and John Hamm. You're the one. That's the Hamm. Can we leave this? Okay, so this is something that people need to know about. So I know this is a Thunder podcast. It's an NBA podcast. You cover the Thunder. I cover the Thunder. People come here to listen about the Thunder and maybe the rest of the NBA sometimes. But there's a more important issue we have to address.
Right.
Let's talk about ketchup first.
Okay. All right. Let's just get into it. Let's just do it.
Let's talk about ketchup. Royce, why don't you I was going to say set the table, and then I realized it was going to sound like a pun. Why don't you set the table?
You just can't help yourself. You just pun on accident. Is that where you're at these days?
It's true. It's all the same. You know, if I were Jeremy Grant, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? I don't really like pun. I don't mind puns. I think nothing right. of puns.
Yeah. Who cares about dunking? Yeah. Did I dunk? Did I have a dunk tonight? I didn't even realize. Did I do a dunk?
I wish Jeremy Grant would just admit how much he loves dunking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess I kind of like dunking. I guess I'm all right. Maybe I'd do the dunk contest. Yeah, I guess. Maybe.
He's incredible at it. Like, it's totally fine to admit that you like something that you're incredible at.
Yeah.
Totally cool. No one's going to be like, he likes that thing that he clearly loves to do and is amazing at. What a jerk. No one's going to ever say that.
So did you just say that you're basically in a backhanded way amazing at doing puns?
No, I think I enjoy punning on Twitter as much as Jeremy Grant likes to dunk.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, although Josh Eustace, I don't think he trolls Jeremy Grant after every dunk.
When is Josh Eustace coming on Locked on Thunder? That's the big question.
I don't know. Josh Eustace and I are feuding, apparently.
Yeah, I know. That's what needs to get hashed out on Locked on Thunder.
All right, let's talk about ketchup.
All right, ketchup.
Let's go ketchup. Tell. Why don't you just explain this ketchup thing to start?
Essentially, okay, so Fred has been made aware of this in the last year that you've been here. I like ketchup on things. I'm a 5-year-old. I put ketchup on most everything I eat. And, like, of course, for those of you listening out there, you're right now saying, do you put ketchup on ice cream? Do you put ketchup on cereal? Do you put ketchup on sweet tea? Like, no, okay. But, like, some of the things that I do put ketchup on, you're probably like, that's ridiculously disgusting. What was it I put it on the other night that you were like, I can't even believe what I was doing. I can't remember what it was. Pasta, some kind of pasta. The thing you can't let go is
but
that
it wasn't
in chicken noodle soup.
That is the ridiculous thing. That's what I was going to bring up. The chicken noodle soup. Because it's a liquid. That's honestly, here's the thing, Rez. You were like, you put it on ice cream. You put it in iced tea. It is just as ridiculous to put it in chicken noodle soup.
I drained the broth. So, and I know to some people this doesn't sound any better. But
it actually sounds worse because you're inconveniencing yourself so you can put the ketchup.
It was basically just like a chicken noodle pasta is what it was. It wasn't a soup. Yes, it's a weird thing that I've spent my whole life liking ketchup on things. As I've gotten older, I probably do it less than I used to. Like when I was like in my late teens and like early 20s, like it was literally like I couldn't eat anything hardly without wanting to put ketchup on it. And I think what kind of drove me away from it was early on, like I didn't have a big problem like asking at a restaurant for ketchup. But as you get older, although I kind of care less about it, like about how people feel, you know, the weird looks. But like as I've kind of gotten older, I've kind of just realized like I don't really need to ask for ketchup. But this is just fine without it. Like last night, for instance. We had lasagna at the Thunder game. That was the media meal. And I totally would have been putting ketchup on that a couple of years ago. But like I was like, yeah, this is fine. This is good enough. I don't need ketchup on it.
Okay, so tell me, in your opinion, not necessarily in what you think other people's opinions are, in your opinion, what is the most egregious food item that you have put ketchup on willingly in your life?
Well, I would say the thing that green beans often freaks people out when I dip ketchup, when I dip a green bean in ketchup. Is that weird? I don't know.
That's totally weird. It's so weird. It's give me another. I just enjoy. I enjoy this too much.
Let's see. Well, I mean, spaghetti. I always put ketchup on spaghetti. I don't know if that's that weird. It's just kind of like a lot of people are like, why are you doing that? It's already got tomato sauce. Like, why are you doing ketchup? And I'm like, all right, because I need the ketchup flavor. I like the way ketchup tastes.
It's shocking.
Like, you know, I don't know. Like some people like put sriracha on everything, like because they love the flavor of sriracha. Like I don't know. I like I can't think of anything. I mean, there's obviously – it's like – it's so normal to me that like when you're like think of something crazy. In my mind, it's like, well, I've put ketchup on, you know – geez, I can't even think of anything right now. You know, I've put ketchup on like this thing for my whole life, so like it doesn't even seem that weird to me.
The chicken soup thing remains the weird.
I acknowledge that one was a little bit odd, but it was like really bland, and I hate to say that because my wife made it, but it was she admits
that's,
it too.
That's I forgot that. That's the best part. That it's not like you made like Progresso or Campbell's soup or something, or even that you got it in a restaurant and like took it home or something, and you were like, this isn't good enough. Let's do it. Is that your Carrie made it, and then you're like, let's drain this thing and fill it up with
ketchup. She even was kind of like, seriously? And I was like, I don't know, it was a little bland.
Oh my God. That is awesome. That is so fantastic. You know what the problem with, you know what the worst ad campaign ever is?
No.
The Wendy's one. Which is completely based on the fact that people, for some reason, can't pronounce the word sriracha.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
When they started serving some sriracha thing, I don't know, sriracha chicken or sriracha what. This is part of why it's so bad, because I don't even know what item it was for, and I've seen it 400 times. And it was just people mispronouncing the word sriracha. I was like, well, you're all idiots, because it's incredibly easy to pronounce.
It's like literally just like phonetics, like sound it out.
Yeah, it's also not – yeah, it's not hard to pronounce, and it is pronounced the exact way that you would imagine it would be pronounced right. If you can read.
It's sriracha.
The weird – like sriracha. No, just sriracha. Such a weird –
It's like people accent. That want to – you know how you can spell ketchup? Catsup? Like those people are just
– Yeah. Well, that's Canadian, I think.
Those are lunatics. Catsup. Catsup.
That's the breaking news.
Also Hunt's. If for those of you out there wondering, I prefer Hunt's ketchup.
Oh, that's super weird. Who doesn't just have Hunt's?
I like Hunt's. I mean, the best ketchup in the world is Whataburger's. If everybody wants to know, Whataburger's has the best ketchup. But out of a bottle,
they have that spicy ketchup.
Oh, spicy ketchup is like it's. I might go take a shower later and put a little in my hair. It's so good.
You're like one of those people. It's like the equivalent of those people who wash their hair with baking soda. You do it. You do it with ketchup.
I like the smell of it.
You found the all natural way of washing your hair with ketchup. We're going to be in a scrum tomorrow, and Russell Westbrook's like going to sniff twice and be like, "What is that?
What is that smell? Does somebody have ketchup on them?
Is someone making burgers right now?" You're going to be like, no, it's Russ. It's just chicken noodle soup.
No, I ate chicken noodle soup for lunch and got a little on my chin.
All right, speaking of Russell Westbrook, he plays for the Thunder, which is a team that we both cover. Mm-hmm. A team that's won 3 in a row now. Denver by 15, Chicago by 15. Played really well in both those games. Memphis, like, didn't play well, but, like, played well while not playing well, which is what happens against Memphis. Certainly one of their best wins of the season. Home win by 8 over the Grizzlies. 24-16, tied with Utah, half a game up on Memphis. They got Minnesota and Sacramento road games coming up. What kind of spot do you think they're in right now? Coming into this January spot, I think they're probably a couple of games better than I thought that they would be. They're tied for the 5 with Utah. Technically the 6 because Utah beat them head-to-head. They're maybe a game or two better than I thought they'd be at this point. I think they're setting up themselves to be in an okay position at the end of this really tough January stretch. How do you evaluate where they're at right now?
Yeah, they need to just take care of the games that they can take care of. I mean, the game against the Wolves, the game against the Kings. Beating the Grizzlies last night at home was, I think, exceedingly important just because you only have three home games. And so you got to take care of those. I think that, you know, kind of looking at the way this January has played out, I think 3-3 is a very solid start to it. The Thunder, I think they would be in a great spot had they started at 4-2. If they could have just beat one of those three teams, whether it was the Bucks, Hornets, or Rockets, if they could have just gotten one of those games, I think they'd feel really good about the spot they're in. Because, you know, they're going on this 6-game road trip. Basically on the road for 15 days. And, you know, that there's some very winnable games within that. But I think that, as we've seen, Fred, the there's no like guarantee check the box game for this Thunder team. I don't think when you're not a true elite team in the NBA, you know, in the class of the Cavs or the Warriors, even the Spurs or even the Rockets. Now I'd almost put them in that category. That there's not very many games in the NBA schedule, especially on the road, that you can just say like, yeah, count that as a win. So yeah, they're playing against, you know, the young Timberwolves who have not been that successful, although they just beat the Rockets. The Kings have been up and down all season long, but they're dangerous on their home floor. Then they've obviously got Clippers, Warriors, which those to me are, you know, it would be you would come away feeling it'd feel like you had a little bit of ketchup in your hair if you could come out of it when going 1-1 in those two games. But then they got, what is it?
Can we make that? Can we make that an expression?
Yeah, just put a little ketchup in your hair.
Yeah.
And then the Jazz game, I don't think, you know, I think that that's almost as tough a game to win as it is to go beat the Warriors. And then, you know, the Pelicans. So these six games, you know, to me, again, 3-3 would be really good. I think that, you know, if they could beat the teams that they're supposed to beat, the Wolves, Kings, and Pelicans, and then, you know, just try to be competitive in the others, and maybe you get lucky enough where one of those Russell Westbrook flailing threes goes down in crunch time, then, you know, if you can just put yourself in that spot, I think you'd feel really good about it. To me, this month of the 15 games, 7-8 would be good. 8-7 would be great.
I think that sounds about right. But you know what? If they go 8-7 over the month of January, which would put them at what, 5-4 over the next 9, right? Which they have,
Yeah.
Because they have 8 of their next 9 on the road. 5 and 4 on a 8 out of 9 stretch is really fantastic. And I know that's your point. So that would put them at 30-20 at the end of January, and they head into February with only 2 road games in all February.
They still have some tough games in February, though.
Yes, no, for sure. But I'm just juxtaposing it to the ridiculousness of what January is, which is going to murder us all. It's going to kill the beat writers more than it's going to kill the players, because we connect and fly commercial.
That's right. It's harder for us. It really is. The NBA schedule is way harder on us. But you look at it, so 3-3 in these next 6, let's just say that. They beat the teams that they're supposed to, lose to who they're supposed to. You beat Dallas at home, so now you're 4-3. And then at Cleveland, at San Antonio, I would assume that those will be losses. So 4-5, that puts them, you know, 7-8 for the month. So like I said, if they could get it to 8-7, that means they beat somebody on the road that they're not supposed to. And I think that could be the Clippers. They've already beaten the Clippers once in LA. I think that, you know, that's a potential game. I think the Thunder honestly match up really poorly with Utah. I think Utah is just going to give the Thunder a lot of problems just with it, the way that they can defend the paint, take away a lot of what Russell Westbrook does effectively. And I think the Thunder have a little bit of a hard time guarding them. But you know, the team that I could see them going on the road and beating honestly is San Antonio. I still think even without Kevin Durant, you know, and Durant has been so phenomenal against the Spurs over the years, but I still think the Thunder carry a lot of matchup advantages against the Spurs, because the things that frustrated San Antonio on their offensive end, which was the Thunder's length, athleticism, and size, it still exists. I mean, even without Kevin Durant, the Thunder still have a lot of those things. So I think that is a potential game the Thunder could be competitive enough in for Russell Westbrook to maybe shoot him into a win.
Spurs are a little bit of a mirage to me. Like they're 30-8. They're obviously really good. I don't think this team is as good as it was last year. Defensively, they're not the same. I think they have exploitable flaws. Like come a playoff series, it's not going to surprise me if they lose like in round 2 again.
Yeah.
I think you can exploit them in pick and roll. Powell, David Lee, like these are guys who you can just run constant pick and roll against. Tony Parker, Patty Mills can run into screens. They still don't have a penetrating guard.
Like right, which is amazing.
Which was one of their biggest flaws last year. Like that was one of the reasons they lost that series. They didn't have a guard who could get into the paint. And people talk about Tony Parker's having a pretty good year considering his circumstances. He's obviously not prime Tony Parker anymore, but he's still a pretty good player. And Patty Mills is one of the better backup point guards in the league. And there's always chatter of like, should Patty Mills start over Tony Parker? There's always that like niche chatter of like NBA Twitter, should he start? It's not going to solve the problems. The problem is that they don't have guards who can penetrate, which is funny because Tony Parker like used to like be the guard who led the league in points in the paint every year.
Right.
And they just don't have that guy who gets into the lane and creates from inside the lane. That's part of the reason why they're like mid-range heavy and not a ton of threes and not a ton of shots at the rim is because they found this market inefficiency and just packed themselves with elite mid-range shooters and have taken advantage of the fact. And that's another reason why, though, I think they're built for the regular season in some ways with the roster, because teams on one day's notice, on 24 hours notice, especially on the second night of a back-to-back, teams just like, they're not changing their defense to adjust for the fact that the Spurs, more than any other team in the league, prioritize mid-range shots. And so when most defenses try to give up the mid-range shot as their first choice, and the Spurs are gunning for an open mid-range shot, it's a good shot for them. It's a bad shot for really the other 29 teams, maybe not Toronto. But those are really the two teams who have tried to figure out a market inefficiency, and it could lead to regular season wins. But come the playoffs, you're going to have coaches and players scheming for that stuff. Even after like two games, let's say it's 1-1 after a, you know, in the seven game series, after two games, players grow more familiar and more comfortable with how to defend that stuff. They think like, all right, now I know how to pop to LaMarcus Aldridge. Guys get hot, they get cold during playoff series. Like we saw that in Aldridge last year when you know, he was insanely hot against the Thunder.
Yeah, the first game was outrageous against the
first
Thunder.
First two games were outrageous. Yeah. He was shooting a crazy percentage from mid range, and then he regressed. I mean, he's a great player, but.
It's kind of hard to shoot 80% throughout a playoff
year. Yes, especially when you're taking exclusively mid-range shots and teams can kind of figure out how they want to guard that. And I think the Spurs are a team that will be easier to guard. Like the disparity between how easy to hard it is to guard them in the regular season versus in the postseason is the greatest of any team in the league.
So all of that to say, do you kind of agree with me that the Thunder match up with them well?
Yeah, I do. I don't think what's weird about the Spurs still have a better road record than they do a home record.
I know, which is odd.
Which is just, it's purely fluke. There's no reason for that. It's just a fluke. Unless like, you know, we find out that like, you know, Kawhi Leonard like has been like, you know, I don't know. I was going to try to think of something that Kawhi Leonard would do in San Antonio. And Kawhi Leonard's been like, you know, he's so obsessed with the Riverwalk that he ends up going swimming in the Riverwalk every night and doesn't end
That's
up
probably it.
He's so excited about the Riverwalk that you know, he's too tired from swimming in the Riverwalk every night.
He swims laps every morning.
But like beyond that, like it's total fluke that that San Antonio is better on the road than they are at home, especially since this team was like undefeated at home. They won like their first 38 games at home or something like that last year. But I think the Thunder match up with them okay. I don't know if they'll like for certain win that game or anything like that, because the Spurs are still great. They could win 60, but they are.
I'm just saying of these road games ahead that look difficult, I would circle that one as a potential win.
Yeah, the Cavs one's not happening.
Yeah, they aren't beating the Cavs. They're not beating the Warriors. I don't think they're beating the Jazz.
I agree with you on the Jazz. The Jazz are really good.
And I think that the way that they play, especially on their home floor, runs in complete opposition of the way that the Thunder want to play. And I realized that you can't just take one game. You know, the Thunder didn't have Oladipo in the game in Utah. You know, it was the second night of a back-to-back. There's a lot of factors
involved. Jazz didn't have a lot of guys either, though. Jazz didn't have George Hill. Favors was hurt, right?
I think that might be right. So you can't just take one game and draw an incredible conclusion from it. Look at the Grizzlies game. The Grizzlies beat the Thunder by 34, and then the Thunder come back and beat them. So it's the NBA. Things happen. Players get hot. You know, games can kind of come and go. I just feel like just from kind of watching the two teams play, even over the years, what separated the Thunder so significantly from the Jazz is Kevin Durant. The Jazz just had nobody on the roster. They'd try Hayward, they'd try Rodney Hood, they try Joe Ingles, they try anybody on Kevin Durant, and they had no answer for the guy to try to guard him. But you know, you take him away and it seems like the Jazz can do what they want to do, and they can load up against Russell Westbrook, try to funnel him to Rudy Gobert as much as possible, contest him in the mid range and try to make him take tough non-paint twos. So I think that the Jazz can just play the Thunder in a way that makes the Thunder uncomfortable.
I think the Thunder are going to win these next two. I think they're going to beat Minnesota. Minnesota, I know they beat Houston. Second night of a back-to-back, though, for Houston. And the Thunder just have have rocked Minnesota. I think
it seems like that's a favorable matchup for the Thunder.
Yeah, I just don't see what Minnesota is better at than the Thunder are.
Outside of like Karl Towns just having like just
a great game, which is certainly possible. But Robinson even, still shuts
Steven
down.
Adams, I think he matches up well with Karl Towns. I mean, even though Karl Towns has been really, really good in the two games against the Thunder, I think Adams is one of the better built defenders for him because he's got the size and he's got the athleticism to kind of compete with him on the perimeter and on the interior.
I agree. And Robertson kind of shuts down the wings. He mostly guards Wiggins and kind of shuts him down. So like maybe Zach LaVine goes off for 7 threes or something.
Yeah, which, I think that's the Wolves' hope is that LaVine just gets ridiculously hot.
Which is definitely possible.
Yeah.
And they're playing a little bit better basketball lately. But I think the Thunder win that. The Thunder lost by 15 at Sacramento last time. I just don't think that's going to happen again. I think they're going to win this time. But after that, I think they're going to lose 6 out of 7.
I think that's very possible.
You think
they'll lose on the road to New Orleans?
I think they're either going to lose on the road to New Orleans or they're going to lose at home to Dallas. Because Dallas, look, home to Dallas sounds nice, but second night of a back-to-back. Second night of a back-to-back that follows a 6-game road trip.
Yeah, that is kind of a setup game right there.
That is such a setup game for – like that's such a – what's it? A trap game, right? That's what we call a trap game.
Schedule loss or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, right? It's such a trap game, that game. Like Dallas is – they're obviously way better than Dallas. But like second night of a back-to-back following – it's their first home game. So they play in the 26th. It's their first home game in over 2 weeks. It's their first home game in 15 days.
Yeah.
And it's the second night of a back-to-back. And to me, like that, I mean, Dallas, you just say Dallas at home, no context. And it's like, yeah, that's a terrible loss if they lose. But that just kind of, that feels like a loss to me.
Yeah. And that was always kind of, I think, the point about this January schedule, as we've talked about, that it's really just about surviving it. You know, just surviving it enough. You know, that way that you're in the mix still for one of those top, you know, 4 to 6 seeds in the West. And because I hate to get too ahead of yourself because a lot of things can happen in the Western Conference, you know, injury or whatever. But for the most part, it seems like the Thunder are locked to make the postseason. But at that point, you know, there's such a jumble right there in the middle class of the West that anywhere from, you know, 4 to 7 is completely up for grabs. And, you know, I'm not saying the Thunder are going to compete for it, but I don't think the Rockets necessarily have the 3 seed on lockdown. There's a lot of games to be played here still. And, you know, it wouldn't, you know, I could see the Clippers winning, you know, 13 out of 14 or something and really making a push for that 3 seed. So, you know, I think that there's a lot up for grabs in the West. So getting through January is just kind of about like making sure that you don't slip too far behind. And, you know, I realize that, you know, some of those games, you know, as fans watch him, you know, the game against the Bucks, you know, the Thunder probably missed so many opportunities late in that game. Even the game against the Hornets, it felt to me like the Thunder should have won the Hornets game more than they should have won the Bucks game. And then obviously the Rockets game, you know, whether it was, you know, Westbrook taking a bad shot or not getting a call or whatever it was. But like those are the coin toss games, I think, that you're going to see a lot in January. And if the Thunder can just figure out a way to win a couple of them, then they'll have a good month and they'll do more than survive. But I'm kind of with you. I kind of see it, you know, I kind of see them being able to maybe get one or two more than you do, but I think they'll beat New Orleans.
Yeah, I think they can get more than one and two. Like they're better than New Orleans, and they destroyed New Orleans last time they played there. Like it wasn't even close. And they're way better than Dallas. So it's not like it would shock me if they won both of those games. I just think that.
But that's kind of my original point too, is that I don't think this Thunder team is capable of, you know, like I said, checking the box and just saying that's a win, that's a win, that's a win. There's a couple home games I think you could do that. The Dallas game under different circumstances, I think you could check the box and say they'll beat Dallas at home. But like you pointed out, the schedule sets that up to be a little bit dangerous. But you know, any game on the road, I think that that's like an adjustment for a lot of people that are watching this team after really enjoying them being an elite level contender for the last, you know, 6 years, basically, is that when you're just a middle class NBA team, or even like, you know, upper middle class, you can't just make assumptions on the schedule. You can't go on the road and just assume you're going to win. It's hard. It's hard to go do it. There's a reason that you lose a lot of these games is because, the things like the ball bouncing the wrong way, not getting a call, not taking a good shot. Those things cost you games when you're not elite. The Warriors and Cavs, they get away with that stuff because it's a next possession and they can easily generate a better shot the next time down the floor or make up for it because they've got incredible talent. When you're a team in the middle class, like the Thunder or Jazz or Grizzlies or whoever that is, your margin for error is so much smaller that you're just going to lose these coin toss games. It's just going to happen.
Can we talk MVP for a sec?
Let's talk some MVP because I don't know if we actually disagree at this point. I'm so up in the air on it because I know you're pro Harden. I'm not
pro Harden.
Thunder fans. Fred Katz is like, I think he's got a Harden shirt on right now. You're wearing a Harden jersey while we talk, aren't you?
Yeah, I wear Harden jerseys to games, actually.
Yeah, to Thunder games.
Yeah. I used to wear Durant jerseys, Durant Warriors jerseys, obviously.
Yeah.
And then I was getting heckled too much, so now I switched to Harden. Next up, I'm going to wear a Kendrick Perkins Cavs jersey.
If you really want to make Thunder fans mad, wear a Derek Fisher Thunder jersey.
Yeah. I want to make any fan base other than the Lakers mad. I just wear a Derek Fisher jersey from there.
Yeah.
Wear a Derek Fisher Jazz jersey to a Utah game. Wear a Derek Fisher Knicks suit to a Knicks game. And
make sure you wear – if you're going to wear a Derek Fisher Jazz jersey, make sure you wear a headband over your ears. I think that's low key like one of the like worst things that's ever happened in NBA history was Derek Fisher wearing his headband over his ears.
How about Jason Kidd wearing his headband so that it could keep a gauze on a cut on his head?
That was out of necessity though. I mean,
it was the most practical headband usage.
That was out of necessity. Derek Fisher, for whatever, chose to wear a headband over his ears.
Yeah, that was weird. Who is it who wears his headband real weird? Dante Cunningham wears his headband weird.
Yeah, he wears it way too high.
Yeah, wears it really weird. He's got a shaved head, but he looks like – I look at it, and whenever I see it, I just think, that guy looks super bald. But, like, he's got a shaved head, but for some reason, the headband accentuates it.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
He's got the Friar Tuck going on. It's like, he's, like, created the – You know, he's got like the side hair made from a headband. It looks weird.
He'll unfortunately never know what it's like to put ketchup in his hair.
No, he won't, and that's sad. That kind of breaks my heart.
Yeah, so I think MVP right now is Harden. That doesn't mean that I'm like locked in and it's Harden for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And there are 42 games and they don't matter and it's Harden. It can certainly be Russell Westbrook. Heck, it can be, Harden has a bad second half. It could be LeBron. It could be, it could be KD. It could be Kawhi Leonard. It's a great MVP race, I think.
I think this is one of the best ones that I can remember a long time because it is – I think it's a two-man race even already just in January. Obviously
– Barring injury.
Can happen, yes. Of course, things can happen. But to me, I think this is going to come down to two players. But I think it's going to be a fascinating discussion because 1 week ago I was like – and like you said the other night, Fred, when we were talking – nobody, I think, can sit here and say, it's this guy. It's this guy, and you can't tell me otherwise. I think that you can lean one way or the other based on certain circumstances. But in terms of, like, deciding and having, a really solid, like, firm opinion on it, I think is just a little bit ridiculous at this point because there's a great case to be made for both guys. And I think the final question is going to come down to it's going to test a lot of our MVP narratives of what we all kind of believe in is like, is it just wins that matter? Because, the Rockets are going to finish with more wins than the Thunder. I think that's a pretty likely thing. Westbrook, depending on how you quantify numbers, in the traditional sense, Westbrook is probably going to finish with better numbers than Harden. But, Harden right now has a very slight edge in terms of points produced, in terms of efficiency, true shooting, all that type of stuff. So there is like kind of the MVP narrative thing, which, Durant leaves, Westbrook carries the Thunder, they're successful against all odds. So, Westbrook kind of has the, that kind of pushing his wind in his sails a little bit. But then again, Harden's got a little bit of the same too, because the Rockets were not good last year. You know, if the Rockets would have been like a top three team last year, I don't think Harden's MVP case is as strong. But one thing that helps an MVP case so immensely, same with like Coach of the Year, is when you exceed expectations. And a lot of people were asking themselves, you know, the Rockets are probably going to be like the 7 or 8 seed this year. And the Rockets are blowing away those expectations and looking like, you know, a true Western Conference final contender. And so much of that is the, you know, with Mike D'Antoni's change, moving Harden to point guard. So I think that, you know, Harden's got almost as much of that narrative boost as anything else, because you remove Dwight Howard from the team, give it all to James Harden. Now it's Harden's team and he's elevating the group to another level. So it's going to be a fascinating discussion. And I think it's going to be tough for all of us to kind of decide on like what's most important to us and like what do we really think that that V stands for in MVP? Is it valuable? Is it outstanding? You know, is it best season? Is it best player? So I think it's going to be a good one to watch.
I think if I had to like just try to choose what it came down to in my mind, if I had to pick one stat, if I had to pick one stat to explain, okay, here's why I think it should be Harden over Westbrook, it's that James Harden has a 61% true shooting and Russell Westbrook has a 54. Now, that picking one stat will demean the greatness of the season that Russell Westbrook is having, because 54% is still a little bit above league average. He's got the highest usage rate ever. And it is not an argument that Russell Westbrook is inefficient, because when people say that, they're wrong, because 54% is above league average and he's doing it on a team where there's not a lot of shooting, where 12 people at once are guarding him, and he's got the highest usage rate of all time, and usage and efficiency have an inverse relationship usually. The more you shoot, the less efficient you're going to be. So if he shot even down to 30% usage, which is still super high, but let's say he had a 30% usage, or even last year he was 32%. Let's say he's 32%, 10 percentage points below where he is right now. It's safe to assume he would probably have the highest efficiency of his career right now. So that's not to demean what Westbrook is doing. That's one thing I think you have to acknowledge with this MVP argument. There are two things that they're, either one that you pick is perfectly fine by me. Like, you can make an argument for either. But the way that people argue, I think you can tell a lot about the way they watch basketball. First off, if they say, oh, it's clearly Westbrook or it's clearly Harden, then they don't know enough about the other candidate. Right. You have to be accepting about both those candidates, because the seasons that they're having any other year, like if the other one didn't exist, they're the clear MVP at least through 40 games. If it's a normal NBA season without the amount of individual offense and team offense that's been going on, either one of those guys is the MVP. Secondly, it bothers me because there's a YouTube reel of James Harden falling asleep on defense from 3 years ago. People are like, well, I care about defense, so I vote for Westbrook. That is the dumbest thing ever. First of all, you haven't watched James Harden game in 3 years then. Secondly, like, they're the same defensive player. Like, how are they different defensively, except Westbrook might get blown by more?
I will say Westbrook's defensive numbers are a little better, but I don't know that that necessarily means anything, because Westbrook has the luxury of playing a lot of minutes with Andre Robertson and Steven Adams. But like, you know, the Thunder are like 9 points per 100 possessions better on the defensive end with Westbrook. The Rockets are like 5.5.
Yeah, those numbers are super noisy though.
And I'm not saying that that's like something to draw a conclusion off of. Because again, like, I think that Westbrook, you know, you can watch a couple possessions from the Grizzlies game last night. There was one that stood out to me incredibly, where Westbrook is just standing. He honestly should have had a defensive 3 seconds called on him, but he was just standing in the paint guarding absolutely nobody. And Mike Conley slips to the corner behind him and hits a wide open three. So, I mean, it was just a complete, you know, Westbrook just completely fell asleep. But, you know, at the same time.
Well,
you know,
Royce, the reason those numbers are so lopsided, though, it's not just because Westbrook plays with Robertson and Adams, who are very good to great defenders. It's also because when Westbrook's off the court, it usually means Kanter is the defensive anchor.
That's true. That's a very good point.
And Billy Donovan plays like Kanter-Laverne lineup sometimes, and he never plays Kanter-Laverne when Westbrook's in. Right. Kanter-Laverne is only with like the exclusive bench unit. Maybe Oladipo's out there, and that's it. So like those lineups get destroyed on defense, and that makes it even more lopsided than it already is. So it's not just that he's playing with good defensive players. It's that like Steven Adams to Enes Kanter is probably the biggest defensive drop-off of any, you know, starting to backup center in the league.
True. at the same time, you know, I think that, you know, in the same way that, like, you know, you can kind of obsess over, you know, Harden's defense and you can pick and point, you know, that, and I pointing out the Mike Conley three last night, you know, Westbrook's defense, I thought in the fourth quarter of the game was pretty good. And I think that a lot of times we look at defense from guards and we're a little bit more harsh on them, because I think playing defense from the guard position is the hardest thing to do in the NBA, like on the defensive end, because you're fighting through, you know, 80 screens a game. Your job is, especially in today's NBA, is to make sure you're guarding the perimeter while stopping dribble penetration. There's so many talented guards out there that make it just incredibly difficult. So I mean, you know, sometimes the guys can look bad. And in a lot of defending from the guard position for both Harden and Westbrook, you're kind of at the mercy of your big man in terms of like the communication, the call that he's making for you, the help that you get from him. I mean, it's kind of a two-man thing that you have to kind of defend the pick and roll together. So like you said, Fred, I don't think there's anything like that you can just circle and say, well, that's why this guy's the MVP. I would say, how many wins do you think would make it unavoidable to give Harden the MVP? Like, how many more wins, like if Harden had, you know, X number of wins more than Westbrook this season, would you say like, okay, it's just, you can't not give it to Harden?
You mean like the average voters, not mine in particular, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, like, let's say like, to me, it's like if Harden wins 60, he's going to get the MVP. It doesn't matter what Westbrook does.
Right. That's what I was going to say too. If the Rockets win 60 and Harden's at like 28 and 12, a super efficient 28 and 12, like that's Harden.
It's just, you're not going to be able to, even if the Thunder, I think if the Thunder win 50, I think Westbrook wins it himself. But I've said this to a lot of people, and you know, I know a lot of people are kind of obsessed with the fact of like what MVP history says. That, you know, you typically got to be a top three seed, most of the time top two seed. You got to win 50 games. I think that doesn't really matter as much this season. I think that while history, you know, obviously kind of dictates what a lot of the things that happen in this MVP award, especially if Westbrook, I've said this a lot, if Westbrook's going to average a triple-double, then, you know, he's making history here. And that alters the scope of what we do with, like, the traditional voting. It's a unique season in that regard. And it's kind of like the same thing that, you know, it's kind of one of my pet peeves in voting in all of sports is that, you know, we tend to try to give the, you know, top individual award to the guy that's on like the best teams. And like we do it with the Heisman Trophy all the time, you know, MVP in basketball. But like a guy can be incredibly valuable and important to his team. Like Russell Westbrook clearly is. You remove Russell Westbrook from the team. I mean, that's everybody's favorite MVP argument. Take that guy off the team. What are they? And the Thunder are easily in the bottom four of the NBA, I think, in terms of record. So, you know, I think that, you know, when you put all of it together, I don't think you can just wrap your, you know, just completely wrap up and say it's got to go to the, you know, the best player on the best team, because the best team is going to probably be the Golden State Warriors. And which guy do you want to pick from that team? Because that's you know, I don't think you can necessarily just single one out and say that guy's more valuable than anybody else on that team.
I completely agree with you. I've never been to the thought that you should have to win 50, have to be a top two seed in order to win MVP. I've never been of that school. If I'm a guy with a vote, and I have no idea if I am, that stuff doesn't really enter. It's more the latter of what you said. Like,
it's the same thing like people not giving somebody an all-star vote based on the fact that their team's not very good. Like, oh, okay, like we're not going to vote for DeMarcus Cousins for All-Star because he plays for an inept organization with, you know, a terrible roster around him. Let's punish him, he's clearly one of the probably three most talented big men in basketball, maybe the most talented. He probably is the most talented big man in basketball, and he's not going to be an All-Star just because he so happens to play on a team that's bad. Like that's just ludicrous to me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. To me, the best argument for Russell, for MVP, is just what he's done in crunch time. It's just crazy. He's won them so many close games. I know the narrative after like some of the threes that he's taken that he's missed, you know, the Houston game or something, some of the narrative, you know, maybe that Clippers home loss, you know, the narrative is, he loves taking the late threes, and he does love taking the late threes. That is true. But the way he's been in crunch time, he won them that Denver game. He pulled away in that Lakers game.
He won them the first Clippers game.
He won both Boston games. Yeah. Like the game in Boston was just unbelievable.
Yeah, that might be his signature performance of the season, honestly.
Right, and he was amazing in the Houston loss. Like they didn't. he may have missed the three, and maybe everyone knew the three was coming and maybe he shouldn't have taken it. But like, they're not in that position if that dude doesn't have 49 points.
I know.
It's
like newsflash, people. Russell Westbrook didn't play a perfect basketball game. I know that shocks some people that Russell Westbrook didn't do that. But he's an imperfect player that makes a lot of mistakes, and that's kind of what makes him who he is that in spite of the mistakes, he's still fantastic. And so, you know, it's like to get the best, you got to deal with the worst, and his best is way, way better than his worst. So, it's easy. It's so much easier to remember the misses than it is to remember. It's the same thing. Like, you know, a lot of people are like, why does Westbrook always take the threes? He didn't take the three against Boston at home when he drove to the rim and won that game. So he doesn't always do it. It's just you remember the ones when it happens. And you also don't necessarily, you know, you're sitting there and you're pumping your fist and you're clapping for the guy when he knocks down dagger threes, you know, against the Celtics, whoever else he's done it against. But then you got a big problem with him taking it when he does it against the Rockets. And I'm not saying that it was a good shot. I think it was a bad shot against the Rockets, and I think he made a mistake. I think he should have drove the ball at Harden. But you got to live with that stuff. It's just it's the plight the Thunder are in right now, and that's I think I've said it all year long. Their record will mostly be determined on how perfect Russell Westbrook can play in the final 4 minutes of games. In the games where he's done it, they win. And in the games that he hasn't, they haven't.
All right, Royce, I know you got to go in a minute. So we're just going to go to, like, speed round, okay?
All right, speed round.
Super quick answers. Does Andre Robertson make all defenses here?
Yes. I think so.
Over under 15 points per game for Steven Adams in the second half of the season.
I'm gonna say over. Don't you think? I see Adams like. I mean, he's like blossoming here. I really think that. I mean, we've seen it a lot, Fred, in like practices and shoot arounds and stuff, and you can see like the offensive game that Steven Adams has. And I've always kind of wondered, like, man, why is he so unwilling to kind of try to bring that onto an NBA floor? And I know that like comfort level is something that's involved in that, but I think you're seeing it more and more that like he's growing comfortable in doing some of the stuff that I think the clear ability that he has, and he's now bringing it in onto like the NBA game floor, and it's showing.
Does Russell Westbrook win All-Star MVP again?
I'm going to say no, because he might be out on the floor with like four Warriors at a time. I don't know if he'll see the ball.
All right. And finally, they were 45.5 was their over-under preseason. Let's bump it up to 47.
Mm.
Over-under 47.
I'm going to say under, because I was going to say 46. The 46 is the number I've kind of got in my head right now. They're going to win 46 games.
Yeah, it feels kind of the same to me. Hey, if you're a Thunder fan and you want to be optimistic about a playoff spot, Portland right now, I think Portland's got the 8 seed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Portland is 500 right now. Let's see. Portland is 18-23 as of we're recording this Thursday afternoon. So Portland is 18-23. The Thunder, if they win this next game, which is at Minnesota, it's a game they should win, they're going to be 25-16 halfway through the season. They're going to be playing at a 50-win pace. They can play sub 500 in the second half of the season and still get to 45.
Yeah. I mean, although Hubie Brown said something last night on that Blazers broadcast that kind of opened my eyes, that through 40 games last year, the Blazers were 16-24, I think he said.
Yeah, they made that run second half. The Blazers have like a way improved defense since Alfred Kamino came back.
Yeah. So I think the Blazers are going to probably finish out strong.
That's fine, but they don't need the if the Blazers make a run, that doesn't hurt the Thunder's playoff chances. The Blazers and someone else needs to make
a
run.
That's true. Yeah,
Sacramento.
It's
got to
be the Kings or the Nuggets,
right,
or
the Pelicans,
you know, whoever it might be. I think that, you know, basketball power index or whatever has got the Thunder at 99% to be in right now. I think that, you know, barring something bad happening, I think the Thunder are for sure in, and they can, you know, so at this point, like we said earlier, Fred, I think it's about kind of trying to, you know, get into that top four, really, I say top four, get into that four and, you know, maybe get home court in the opening round.
Yeah, that would be something. I don't know if that's going to happen, especially once the Clippers get back.
What's your dream first round matchup? Not from like a, you know,
Houston.
This favors the Thunder, but just from like a this would be fun perspective. Houston?
No question, Houston. All three of those games were amazing. You get number one versus number two in MVP. I don't know which one's which, but at the end of the year.
And that could be 3-6. I think that's very reasonable. 3-6.
Yeah, it's 3-6 right now.
Yeah.
So. It's totally – it could
or even 4-5. Like I said, I'm not ruling out the Clippers making a big push in the second half. So.
Or 2-7.
Yeah. Or 1-8. Let's just go crazy. Let's get all the options out there.
It's – or 0-9 maybe.
Yeah, the 0-9 matchup.
No one ever talks about the 0-9 matchup.
Nobody ever does.
All right. Final speed round question, and then I will let you go back to your family. What is one item you've never put ketchup on that you would think, oh, you know what? I should put ketchup on that, but you've never done it.
That's a good question. Never put ketchup on. What's something I've never put ketchup on? You know, I know it wouldn't be good, but like I never put it on like a deli sandwich. Like I never would do that, but I don't think I would think that that would be good.
What about like tortilla chips dipped in ketchup?
I'm sure I've done that in my life, but I mean, that's, I'm reasonable here, Fred. That's salsa, salsa and queso. Yeah.
Do you love those like the is it Lay's who does the ketchup potato chips?
I've never had them.
What?
I guess I should have them. I've never had them.
There are ketchup potato chips. I think Lay's makes them.
So that is actually in. I would say that to a lot of people out there, and maybe that is a normal thing, but like regular old baked Lay's dipped in ketchup is pretty good. Like it's pretty good.
Well, it's
or Cheetos, yeah, by the way. Cheeto Puffs dipped in ketchup is pretty good too.
Okay, it's a weird thing. That's just a genuinely weird thing. Yeah, but they have Lay's ketchup chips.
Yeah. So is apple pie. Put a little ketchup. I'm just kidding about apple pie.
All right, Royce. Where can the people find you?
In my office at my house right now. Is that – that's not a pun. That's just a bad joke, right?
Yeah. There's no play on words. It was just
– It felt like such a bad joke. I associated it with a Fred pun.
It was so bad that even the crickets actually started laughing just because they were so uncomfortable.
I just got the pity laugh.
Yeah.
Laugh from everybody.
The crickets were so uncomfortable about the silence that even they started laughing.
It's like reporters when they hear like a joke from a player that's not very funny. We all just go
– Which player gets like the reporter laugh most often?
I mean, Steven Adams does, but from the most
but
part,
Steven's
from
me, funny. Steven's
yeah, I'm actually funny. Laughing.
Yeah, I think Russell gets the reporter laugh. Yeah,
Russell gets the like I'm so scared of you laugh. Everybody there is like what is it that he had something last night that he said that like everybody kind of chuckled at? But
there was a thing in Chicago where somebody asked him if a Chicago reporter asked him if Jimmy Butler would. If, whether Jimmy Butler played not, how that affects.
Oh yeah,
him.
Yeah, I saw that video.
Russell was like, "It doesn't change anything." And then he asked him again. He was like, "Really, Chicago's best player not playing wouldn't change anything?" Russell like sarcastically looked away. He was like, "Let me think." And then he went back. Said, "Doesn't change anything." And like everyone whose like butts were clenched just started laughing really hard.
It's everybody's response. It's just like let's just try to laugh through the awkwardness.
Yep. Yep, yep. That is exactly what it is. All right, Royce, I'll let you go to your family. I've kept you too long. Royce is on SportsCenter. Royce is on ESPN.com. Royce is on Twitter. Royce is on Twitter at Fred Katz. Royce has now tied John Hamm. And it's a record that Jerry Ramsey will never get.
Fred, I have to point it out because I know everybody else was, but you just, this is classic Fred. You just said Royce is on Twitter at Fred Katz.
Oh, I said that? Yeah. Yes. I mean, Royce is on Twitter at Royce Young. No, did I really just say that?
Yes, you did.
Oh my God.
You're like a caricature of yourself. At this point.
this is getting edited out. This is done. This podcast is just going to end abruptly at some point. People are going to be like, "Why did it end?" Like, you'll never know.
Well, Fred said a thing.
You'll never find out. You did have the worst spill of the year, though. So at least
I did have a bad. I had a legit spill, and
they had to change the tablecloth.
Yeah, it was bad. It was really bad. It was embarrassing.
Worst spill of the year. All right, Royce. I'll see you at practice in an hour.
All right, sounds good.